We begin with politics. It's a bit of a transformative moment here in the campaign. Newt Gingrich contemplates life after being an also-ran to Mitt Romney.
If he does get to 1,144 delegates, I'll support him. I'll do everything I can this fall to help him defeat Obama, because the primary goal of the entire Republican Party has to be to defeat Barack Obama.
Boy, he sounds fired up, doesn't he? The primary goal of Newt Gingrich is also to pay back his formidable campaign debts left over from his ultimate failure in those primaries. And the story of what Gingrich, Santorum, and Ron Paul do now that there's almost no mathematical possibility of surpassing Mitt Romney's delegates is less interesting than who Romney will select or needs to select as his running mate. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick joins us for more on the campaign and on this tantalizing mystery. Todd, welcome to the program.
Everybody's into the Veep stakes, John. Why not us? It's speculation at this point, but there are so many names, and it's consequential. So,
Well, absolutely it is. And tell me how the transition happens in Washington away from the sort of delegate count and into this, all right, job one, which is selecting Mr. Two on the ticket, because down through history, this is a very high-stakes decision.
It is, and high-stakes decision, and then yes and then no. The public, I think, has a misconception about how much the vice presidential choice delivers in terms of electoral returns. However, there is no doubt that a popular pick from a swing state can deliver that state, and in a close election, a state like Ohio or Florida delivered to your camp that would be on the razor's edge to begin with could mean the election. So in terms of counting electoral votes, it can be entirely consequential. In terms of a national popular vote, I think you'd be hard-pressed to name a time when a vice presidential pick put a candidate over the top who otherwise would not have been. It's hard to imagine that. It doesn't really happen. So you look at it in these cases. Well, I should also say, in terms of governing, in terms of once you get into the White House, the vice presidential pick has become increasingly important. Look, I think that the era of the useless vice president, if I can call it that, is probably over.
Dick Cheney completely transformed that. And, of course, his choice was very much about bolstering a sense of inexperience on the part of George Bush. In the case of JFK, he needed Johnson to deliver Texas in that close election against Richard Nixon in 1960.
He needed Johnson for political reasons, but Johnson turned out to be the most consequential of vice presidents because he was thrust into the presidency and ultimately was extremely prepared, highly effective, one of the most consequential presidents of the last 50 or 75 years, without a doubt.
Can we talk about some flaky choices or seemingly flaky choices? Dan Quayle, for instance, Spiro Agnew, Richard Nixon?
You can talk about all those. You have to mention Sarah Palin, who in Washington right now is being discussed as the sort of what not to do for somebody like Romney. There were good reasons to choose somebody like Sarah Palin. She was unknown. She was charismatic. She was a compelling public speaker to a lot of people. She was very conservative. She was what they call, to use a cliche, the Hail Mary pass to shake up the race, because John McCain, because his predecessor was so very unpopular, Republicans were so very unpopular, the McCain camp opted for the Hail Mary pass above all the other considerations. Alaska doesn't really matter in terms of electoral votes as Republican anyway.
But in the football analogy there, you can do the Hail Mary pass, but you do have to have a receiver downfield. And Sarah really kind of wasn't that.
It's a great point, and that is why Republicans now, who are now circling around the VP question as well as other campaign strategy questions, are looking really at avoiding the Hail Mary pass with perhaps a somebody with not very long arms on the other end of it.
So let's run down some names. A lot of these are going to be familiar to our listeners, but if there's any setup that you want to give us here, help us out. First of all, let's take I don't know if he's on the top list, but he's certainly a very credible individual.
I absolutely believe that come November 2012, I'm going to be governor of New Jersey and not in any other office. But the fact of the matter is, if Governor Romney, who's going to be our nominee, picked up the phone and called me to talk about this, I love my country enough and I love my party enough to listen.
That sounds like Chris Christie from New Jersey. A great debater, kind of a hardcore guy, charismatic. People on the right are increasingly liking him. He's from the Northeast, and boy, if they could deliver a blue state like New Jersey, that would sure be attractive. There's a lot that people like about Chris Christie. He's gaffe-prone. He tends to make mistakes, and he has a temper, so that's one thing on the negative column for him. But Chris Christie's certainly up there. I would call him maybe at the bottom of the top tier, How about that?
All right, that sounds good. How about South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley?
Mitt Romney has a woman problem, let's put it succinctly,
yep.
And Nikki Haley might be able to help with that. She is scandal-prone in her own home state. South Carolina's red territory anyway, so it doesn't deliver a lot electorally in her own state, but might give a boost nationally with women. She's young. She's also charismatic. She's well-liked on the right, which might help Mitt Romney where he's weak politically, which is with Tea Party folks and conservatives.
Right, although being scandal-prone in South Carolina is almost like a requirement for the job, right? Here, listen to Nikki.
Touché.
Here's Nikki Haley.
I'd say thank you, but no. Yes, because I am incredibly proud to represent the best state in the country. And I will also tell you I made a promise to the people of this state. And I think that promise matters, and I intend to keep it.
All right, so she sounds like she's taking herself out, but, you know, you never know until the phone call actually comes in. Seems to me the no-brainer here is Rick Santorum. That's the obvious choice.
Yes and no. Rick Santorum has a lot of support because he's got all those delegates already. He's from a swing state, Pennsylvania. Conservatives seem to like him. Evangelicals respond to Rick Santorum. He's checking a lot of boxes that Romney's having trouble with. The trouble is Rick Santorum really hasn't been running for vice president. He's been tearing Romney to shreds. Doesn't seem like a guy who's running for VP at all. Hasn't really been building a lot of bridges.
So, okay, the final two names here. Number one, very well known, Paul Ryan, who very much a friend of Mitt Romney, has gotten an endorsement from Mitt Romney, and this fellow from Florida.
Well, I'm enjoying my time here in the Senate. It's a privilege to serve here, and that's really what I'm focused on. I'm not going to be the vice presidential nominee, but I'm always flattered when people bring it up. I think they mean it as a compliment.
So tell us about the chances of Paul Ryan and that Senator Marco Rubio from Florida.
Paul Ryan, the chairman of the Budget Committee, certainly seems to get along with Mitt Romney. They got along swimmingly up there in Wisconsin. And frankly, that's not nothing, John, because Mitt Romney notoriously doesn't have a lot of friends in the Republican Party. He may be able to win. He may get support, but not a lot of like. They seem to like each other. Marco Rubio just checks every box, doesn't he? Tea Party backed,
yep.
Conservative, Florida, Latino, charismatic, funny, young. He doesn't have a long record for people to beat him up on. And we got to mention one other person from Ohio, Rob Portman, who's a senator, who's a budget man, former Bush budget official. A lot of people like Rob Portman from that swing state of Ohio as well, John.
As usual, from deep inside the bubble in the Washington Beltway, Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks, Todd.
Pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.